Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast. Holy f***ing the Milwaukee Bucks. That'll come through edited. Don't worry, Jim. The Milwaukee Bucks are going to the NBA Finals. They defeat the Atlanta Hawks on Saturday night. They win the series 4-2 without Giannis Antetokounmpo for games 5 and 6. The Bucks prevail for the first time since 1974. This team is going to the NBA championship. They're going to face off with the Phoenix Suns. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Point Forward podcast, and on the other line is Jim Ozarski. He's the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is in Atlanta still. It's the wee hours of the morning as we break this down as best we can. Jim, I'm gonna just start the same place I did when they beat the Nets in Game 7. Just give me the lay of the land here, the scenes, the things that really stick out, whether it be from those Zoom meetings or from the celebration on the floor. I mean, you got to see this up close. What's going to stick out for you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely what will stick out is Giannis Antetokounmpo watching it like the rest of us, albeit with a better view, and just sort of the hug that he and Chris Middleton had 8 years together to get to this point. And let's be honest, JR, I mean, no one, if you rewind it back then and you would have said those two would be here, I don't even think John Hammond would have believed you. So that sticks out. The fact that they then, you know, embraced Mike Budenholzer, much maligned, PJ Tucker. I asked him about that specifically and he just kind of laughed. He's like, oh, I heard this is the year that Bud's really adjusted. So that immediate emotion, JR, yes, on the court, hugging and just the immediate exaltation of that. That said, I could hear the celebration from the locker room. We are not allowed in with COVID. So they were partying. They were whooping it up without a doubt. However, PJ Tucker said there was no champagne. They have not done anything yet. Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton, it's like the Nets, JR. Like they still felt there's still more to go. It's part of it. And that's impressive as we record this and there are more games to play. So yes, the immediate of it. And then also the little bit of the aftermath where it's like, hey, we'll celebrate on the plane and then, you know, finals.
Yeah, one of the many things have like gone viral in the moments after this game. It was just a ton of discussion. There was a shot though from TNT going into the locker room real briefly, and I think it just caught the Bucks at sort of a weird time, but this was sort of as they were winding down their Marv Albert appreciation segment on TNT. It's his last year as the lead, as the broadcaster for TNT, the main NBA broadcaster. The Bucks are just milling around in their locker room. They seemed completely, it seemed like a completely ordinary moment. It did not, there was no remnants of champagne celebration anywhere. There was no confetti on the floor or anything. I don't know if that's a thing, that there would be confetti in a clubhouse or a locker room, but in any event, they seemed kind of just like, ho-hum, time to catch a plane to get back home to Milwaukee. I'm sure that's not really how they handled it. I mean, you saw some of the stuff on Instagram and saw some of the stuff on, I think just Instagram primarily, maybe some stuff on Twitter. They were happy, but there was a little bit of a, it certainly wasn't an achievement celebration. It was more like next step celebration. That did surprise me a little bit. I thought they would be pretty elated, but it does seem like there's still a business trip to go, and this Phoenix Suns team is really good, and we'll talk about them, but I hope they know this is like a landmark achievement for the first time in a generation. I'm sure that has dawned on them. But yeah, they're pretty chill about it, huh?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, let's be honest. I think if you're a fan and you're out, still out, as we record this, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're the boring ones here talking about this.
You want that, right? Like, you know, look, if they're greeted at home, they'll whoop it up. And if they're sent off, they'll be excited. You know, don't get me wrong. But you want that as a fan. You don't want them feeling like they they accomplish the end goal, because that just set, kind of sets you up, right, for disappointment. So no, they know. They were asked questions about Phoenix in the post game, a couple of them, and you know, it's Mike Budenholzer, for you know, whatever fans want to think. I mean, he's been here before. He's got four rings, so it, you know, he knows. Yeah, JR, I think that's a good place to be. That's where you want them mentally. You know, still riding that even keel, no, not too high, not too low, the thing they preach. It's clearly taken root.
The last time we talked, we didn't know the severity of the Antetokounmpo injury. We assumed the worst. I should say, I certainly assumed the worst. It's not the worst. No ligament damage. He did not play, as I'm sure everyone in the world knows, in game 5 or 6. But the Hawks also were without Trae Young in games 4 and 5. He, obviously the Bucks did not play well with Trae Young sidelined in the game where Giannis got hurt. I mean, we did talk about that game, but then Trae Young unavailable to play for game 5. And that turned out to be a big, you know, a big deal. The Bucks were, you know, with both teams missing their star, were able to, you know, rise up and win. I won't say convincingly, but they definitely controlled it from the tip. And really, they never trailed in game 6 either. Much in my mind, much closer, much tighter until Chris Middleton takes over in the third quarter. Giannis unavailable, and Chris Middleton, you mentioned those guys at the outset. They're acquired in the same year. Giannis in the 15th pick in that 2013 draft, and Middleton in a July trade that. Where he wasn't the focal point, that was not a lot of fanfare. Brandon Knight ends up coming to the Bucks. Brandon Jennings goes to the Pistons. A couple other pieces in that deal, but that was a trade for Brandon Knight, who led the team in scoring the next 2 years. So the Bucks got that much out of it, and then Chris Middleton, who has become this unlikely superstar. He's a streaky guy, and there are times in this series where he hasn't been present, you know, as much as you know maybe he would be otherwise. So I don't know if you could say he's inconsistent, but definitely in the third quarter, the man absolutely took over. I know we're probably still going to hear some Middleton slander out there, but I just don't know how it's how there can be any left, because what he did in game 6 to will this team into the next round, into the NBA Finals. I mean, just tell me what it was like watching that in person. It's like switch flipped, and Chris Middleton was suddenly just this unstoppable tour de force.
Yeah, and you know, look, we've seen it before. We saw it in Brooklyn. You know,
We sure
we've
did.
seen him do these things, 20 points in a quarter. You know, and I still stand kind of by what I had said earlier in different podcasts with you, JR, where he was the kind of guy who needed, from the national level, and not that he cares, but for sake of conversation, this type of stage to do these types of things. So maybe next year, people like us who see him every day, it's not, you know, is Chris Middleton a real number 2? Can he carry the team if Giannis is out, or if, you know, Jrue Holiday's shot's not falling? Like, the Bucks are in the NBA Finals because Chris Middleton took over and closed games throughout this playoff run. And while it's frustrating at times, if he doesn't play well or shoot well, I mean, that just is what it is. You know, I think that's like any guy, JR. He was unconscious. It was, I know he just did this, but it's a clincher, right, JR? It's different. It's on the road, against a team that, and a fan base that was ready. I mean, they had just gotten within what, 2 points, excuse me. They opened the third quarter with a bucket. And so that place is just rocking, and then it's over. Like, it's over. And I know that, look, the Hawks got to within 6 in the fourth quarter. Credit to them. But guess what? You know, there's Chris Middleton hitting another couple free throws, and all of a sudden they're up 10 again, and you know, they're packing up. I don't know, JR. I think I'm sure if the Bucks lose in the finals and he doesn't play well, he'll still catch some stuff. But I think for who he is and what he is in Milwaukee to do, I don't know. I think he answered a lot of questions. I think right now the finals would be just cake topping, if you ask me.
Yeah, there's no question he'll be remembered for what he does in the finals. I think he could be remembered fondly. You know, he could take over games, and he might have to still, because we still don't know exactly what to expect out of Giannis going forward. Now, you can sort of read between the lines here and imagine how the Bucks played this. they won game five, kind of a straight up, you know, our star's out, your star's out. They win that game at Pfizer Forum. They know that worst case scenario, they're coming back on a Monday night to play at Pfizer Forum in game seven. And game six in Atlanta, a little bit of house money. Maybe Trae Young comes back and he's not 100% or he's unable to play. The former is exactly what happened. Trae Young clearly not at 100% and struggled really with his shots in this game and struggled to even get to double figures. You know, you don't play Giannis in that game because your season isn't on the line. And maybe you come back in game seven and now we start to experiment. Maybe they try to get Giannis in there. I don't know if they ever would have gotten to that point. None of us do, of Giannis playing in game seven. But it's easy to see how that could have happened, you know, read between the lines and hear the rumors that that sounded like a possibility at least. And then you look at, you know, what's going to happen here in the NBA Finals. It's easy to think that Giannis is going to be able to play, or at least will try to play. I don't know if you have any read whatsoever on what his availability might be. This is going to be the number one question going into the finals. Not just will he play, but how healthy is he? You know, how much will he be able to contribute? But he's not like Trae Young. He's not a little guy who relies on cutting. You know, he can still be pretty explosive given his size and physical gifts, even if he's not at 100% with his lower body. Obviously, you don't want to risk long-term stuff, and he still might not be, you know, not the Giannis we're used to. But I don't know. I feel like this is a possibility that we're going to see Giannis in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I do think he will play. I think he will be pushing to play game one. Now, game one will be exactly a week from the injury, which, you know, hyperextension is not a diagnosis. It's just it's sort of the mechanism of what happened. So, you know, with them not saying what he actually suffered in there, and he did. I mean, it could be the same sort of capsule issue that he had last year. It could be, you know, bone bruising. Who knows? But, you know, Mike Budenholzer said that kind of in their walkthrough on Saturday, he did get on the court. Now, he could have just stood there and shot free throws. You know what I mean? But it's still, that would have required bending the leg and kind of all that stuff. So, you know, I'm not going to project on. We did ask to talk to him today. We thought it was important and a big deal if, you know, he would speak on the team reaching the finals for the first time since 1974, and that request was denied. So he will speak Monday, July 5th at the NBA Media Day. I'm sure he will be coy as he's wont to do, as the team, I'm sure, will make him say, you know, I don't know, whatever. But in general, JR, I mean, look, if you stretch this out from July 6th through potential game seven of the 22nd, you know, they build in a couple 2 days off early in the series. I think he is going to play. And now, obviously, you know, how and what it'll look like. I can't say, but I do think he will play in the NBA Finals.
I thought Jrue Holiday had a massive, massive game, certainly game five, but game six as well. You know, the shooting is still not there, and it got a little bit better with Middleton's surge and with things, the bench really helping the cause here in game six, but the shooting has still not been there for the Milwaukee Bucks, even when they're winning games, and Jrue Holiday has been sort of emblematic of that. It hasn't happened for him. He struggled with the free throw line. He has not hit his outside shot very consistently, but he was still there for a couple big ones, including a really massive drive to the basket between two guys, you know, reverse layup at a time when It had gotten to be a 6-point game. A 22-point lead had gotten down to six, and that's just the offensive part of the game. His defense has been so tenacious. You know, he's getting a lot of steals. Yes, he's turning the ball over from time to time. He's playing a ton of minutes. It's going to happen as the guy who's, you know, running the offense from end line to end line, and he's just always involved here. He is such a smooth, cool customer. And it seems like he's always right there. This acquisition they made before the season, yes, it cost, you know, it affected like four first-round draft picks. I still think maybe they got a deal out of this. You know, it really feels like Jrue Holiday came to play at a time when they absolutely needed him.
Yeah. And, you know, JR, I'll give our listeners a little hint, a little tease. Obviously, we're going to have a lot of content squeezed into just these couple of off days. And Jrue Holiday, you know, we're going to take a deeper dive into that. I mean, look, He was acquired for this reason. And he has insisted, JR, from December through July, that he has felt no pressure. He actually said, he's like, hey, if anybody should feel pressure, it should be Chris and Giannis. They've been here longer, you know. I don't know, man. Like, that's a real thing. Like, and I think this goes back to the Brooklyn series, JR. Maybe I'm already forgetting what games it was when it, you know, the shots off and he still took them in the fourth quarter and then made them.
Yeah, like, that was seven, baby.
Yeah,
that was game seven.
Game seven. So I think that's what's based in this, right? Like, because you would think, look, I've been around guys who they're playing for a contract and they think about it and they stress and they don't play well. I've been around guys who sign a big contract and then they feel they got to do more, you know, and they think about it. And they, you know, guys who, you know, who press a little, like, they're human, right? And this guy, you're right, from day one has just been himself and never let it get to him in any form or fashion. And that's just impressive. And yeah, I think in game six, yes, Chris Middleton deserves the headline for the third quarter. He and Drew did not play well in the first half, 9 turnovers combined. But yet Drew Holiday also is good enough where if he makes a bad pass, he'll just go take it from you on the other end.
Yeah.
And he did that. He did that game six, and he made a couple big buckets in third, fourth quarter when it got a little tight. And yet, you know, again, how often does that work, JR? Oh, I know. 50 years ago when they acquired another point guard to get over the top.
Ah, the parallels. And in fact, if you have not read Jim's oral history of the 1971 NBA championship team, you must, you must, you must, you must. Ben Steele wrote a great story about Oscar Robertson. There are a lot of parallels we can draw with this year's team, although the injury to the superstar may not, that certainly is a new part to the script. And so is Jeff Teague, quite honestly, because game six was the Jeff Teague game. Jim, I had every intention of asking you this very point blank question. What does Jeff Teague have to do to not end up with more minutes? Because it seems like every time he played in this series, he was bad or just overmatched, or, you know, maybe it was bad timing or whatever. But like, Jeff Teague wasn't bringing anything to the table. And yet he was still going out there game after game for, you know, maybe as few as 2 minutes. But it didn't seem like there was any explanation for why Jeff Teague was getting out there on the floor, other than maybe they just had to have someone absorb some of the time so that you didn't have the same guys out there the entire time. But then he comes out and scores 11 points in game six. He hits three threes at a time when no one is hitting threes on this Milwaukee Bucks team. He goes out there, hits three of them against his old team in Atlanta. I mean, talk about a satisfying finish for Jeff Teague. Absolutely a moment when they needed him. So, you know, maybe Mike Budenholzer knew something we didn't, that he had that instant offense in him. But this was sure a very special moment. He's going to get minutes in the finals now. Like, there's no, you can't hold him out. You got to ride the little wave you got going. But I think they still win this game without Jeff Teague, but I can't be positive of that. Is that crazy?
I mean, look, he hit three threes and they were all timely. I mean, they won by 11 points, JR. He scored 11.
He scored 11 points. There you go.
He was 3 of 3, 2 of 2 free throws. I mean, his free throws basically were the end, right? And look, again, you never know. It's kind of like that, you know, as they say, even if you hit a game-winning shot, it's never really truly that play that decides the game. And I think Jeff Teague's 12 minutes and 3 threes and 2 free throws. Yeah, I don't know if they win without that. Let's be real. Pat Connaughton, 13 points, 3 of 6 from 3. Where 8 rebounds. Where did that come from? Bryn Forbes hits 1-3, but again, when did it come? It was important. Forbes, Connaughton, Teague combined for 10 points, 7 rebounds. Toss a Thanasis steal in there. I mean, they kept that thing together in the first half, JR. I know the Bucks ran out to a 7-point lead. Hawks go 12-3. They pull it close. The whole reason the Bucks even had a lead at half was they actually got something from their four bench guys. And I do mention Thanasis' steal because it goes the other way, right? And it's, yeah, I think it helped that, you know, Trae Young is hurt. I don't know if I mean, we saw Jeff Teague on a healthy Trae Young. That wasn't going to work. But I
Ooh,
think
yeah, that was not good.
the changes in defense and look, his threes were open. He made them. Big time plays, man. I mean, he's played a lot of basketball. And look, Middleton and Holiday had four fouls, five fouls. They couldn't really, they needed some help, defensively to be able to use some fouls and score. Yeah, it was a total team effort to win game six in Atlanta for sure.
Bucks bench really limited by the loss of Giannis. It was already a tight, with Dante DiVincenzo out. It was basically eight guys. Now down to seven. You needed everything you could get from the bench, and that's what they got from Connaughton, from Teague, from Bryn Forbes, Thanasis in his very limited amount of time. You had to get max output from those guys to survive this time period without Giannis, and that's exactly what they got. Game five too. They had some big moments. The Hawks bench. That was an asset for them. Like Cam Reddish
Yes.
was maybe the best player on the floor in game six. And, you've obviously already got Danilo Gallinari coming off the bench, Lou Williams coming off with Trae Young back in. Williams has been a pretty good thorn in the side the last two games, not so much in game six. So the Bucks did find some ways to slow things down. If Trae Young does sit out game six, if he doesn't play, do you think it's different? I mean, that's something I think Atlanta people will be talking about. I mentioned this last time when he got hurt and tried to come back in. The Bucks were a little bit better off when he was on the floor. Do you think that maybe Atlanta would have been better off if the hobbled version of Trae Young had just not played tonight?
It's funny because they'll say no. I it's might be appropriate for me to say yes. And what I mean by that is he had five turnovers. I mean, heck, the first play of the game, he turned it over. And, 4 of 17, 0 for 6 from 3. He did have 9 assists. That's not a small thing. He made 6 of 7 free throws. So they needed all. Look, they lost by 11. He had 14. I don't know where an additional 25 points comes from if you look at it that way. I mean, Lou Williams only played 12 minutes. That was the shortening of the bench with Trae Young coming in. Nate McMillan thought Trae Young at his level was better than Lou Williams. And as we're talking this out, JR, I think no, I think they needed to play Trae Young because I thought Lou Williams these last two games passed up shots. I think he didn't look like the guy that we're used to seeing with Lou Williams. Chris Dunn was a turnover machine. That's one of the reasons the Bucks won game five. I mean, Chris Dunn, I think, felt like a turnover a minute or turnover every 30 seconds. So if you look at it in that way, I don't know where 25 more points comes from if you take Trae Young out, but I definitely see where you get five or seven more turnovers. So I'll go with that. I'll say I think they made the right call. I think maybe if he makes one or two of those threes, depending when he makes them, maybe things change. That might have been what the difference was.
Yeah, and I mean, like you had Okongwu, who at times in the series was really, really good, and he's still solid, but he's only given you a few minutes. He's still a rookie. You can maybe take advantage of him defensively from time to time. Clint Capela, I thought had a really good series. I mean, on both ends of the floor, he was a rebounding machine and came up with big shots. But he's just not an offensive powerhouse. And if he's scoring 15 a game for you, it feels like maybe because something else went wrong. I mean, John Collins and Kevin Huerter. They flashed in this series, but they were inconsistent throughout. I mean, actually, the Hawks, I think they kind of probably did as well as they could here, pushing this to six games.
Yeah.
The Giannis injury notwithstanding, that sort of made things, I would say, much more even. But the Hawks were happy to be there. Not that they, didn't want to keep winning. Of course they did. It's just like getting to this point was a pretty good achievement for that Atlanta team. And, first playoff experience for Trae Young. They got a lot more left in the tank going forward, but the Bucks took advantage of what they had to. Here's something that I dealt with a lot on the blog, on the live blogs, which we'll continue to do through the finals at jsonline.com. With the three-point shooting as it has been, I've tried to explain why the NBA in the NBA you're still going to take those three-point shots, the open ones, the in-system ones. You're going to take those shots even if you're continually struggling to hit them game after game after game after game. Now, they did hit some big threes in this game. I think they finished around 37-38%, which is just shy of what they did in the regular season. But it's been a struggle to even get to 30%. And at the same time, they had a lot of success in the lane, certainly with Giannis when he was there. Brook Lopez with 33 points in Game 5 was a force to be reckoned with. We didn't see as much of him in Game 6, but the Bucks are able to get to the basket against this Atlanta team. So maybe just explain to people like their five, why wouldn't the Bucks just abandon the three-point shot, as you know, whittle it down to almost nothing, and just attack, 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 attack. Why would the Bucks not do that? I need somebody else, an adult, someone who covers this team to explain it, because I'm getting a little exhausted doing it. So can you shed some light on that, Jim?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, that's the game in general. I mean, you have to shoot three-pointers. They only shot 21, or excuse me, that's free throws. They shot 45. They made 17. I don't know if anybody complained when they were 9 of 17 in the third quarter. Right. So that's
the complaints did decrease, I noticed. Yes.
Yes. So that's the thing. We've been over it. It was like, well, the math never came back around for them. Maybe it will in Phoenix. Who knows? You know, or the finals at Fiserv Forum. But this isn't the 80s or 90s. Like, you can't post, quote unquote, like you used to back then. There were no zones allowed back then. There were no shading of defenses. You couldn't sort of show different things. I mean, go back and pull up people love to say Giannis needs to go to Hakeem Olajuwon's big man camp. Pull up Hakeem Olajuwon. He would go plant on the block, and he had to be solo. Either one person guarded him, or you had to double team. Like, those were the rules. And so, like, you couldn't kind of mess around with defenses like you can now. It's just not the same. And so I don't mean to be condescending, but the game literally has changed. It's not just, oh, they shoot a bunch of threes all the time. Like, I mean, defensively, you literally cannot post like that anymore. It just doesn't work that way. So, yeah, I get where, you know, fans got a little frustrated. They got away from Brook Lopez, and that's true. Look, the Hawks did what they said they were going to do. They took away points in the paint, 40 for the Bucks, 40. I mean, the Hawks would take that all day long, JR, to match. Look, they nearly matched total in offensive rebounds, 12 for the Bucks, 13 for the Hawks. Difference is the Bucks scored 23 points off those. The Hawks scored 17. The Hawks did, you know, they forced the Bucks into what is this, 15 turnovers. I can understand maybe getting away from Lopez to a degree, but you got to give Atlanta a little credit in that way. Just much like game four before Giannis got hurt, JR, it was the same kind of deal, right? Like, they were crashing the middle and forcing the Bucks to take threes. And, you know, if it's open, you got to take it.
And I would also contend, no shade whatsoever on Brook Lopez. Awesome. Awesome player. Has been great for them. Has had a very good series against the Hawks. A lot of his offense is set up for him. You know, like, he's not bullying his way through double teams. Certainly he's done that before and he can do that. But that's Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton creating. And finding Lopez in the perfect spot so that he can throw down those one-handed jams. And why is that space available? It's because the Hawks have to defend at the perimeter. They have to defend against the possibility that Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday are going to shoot those shots, are going to shoot three-pointers. And because that's always a threat on the table, they're able to operate a little bit. They're able to get a cutter. They're able to find Brook Lopez in a spot where he's right underneath the basket and just has to, like, stand on his tiptoes and put the ball in the hoop. So that space goes away the less and less you shoot. Obviously, yes, it's been a struggle. And maybe, you know, for one game, you just say, you know what, let's just not take threes here for the next 8 minutes and let's just pound the paint and figure it out that way. You could do that. But it's never going to be like, let's just turn off the three-point offense. That's just never going to be how it is. And, you know, this is what they practice. This is what they prepare for, an offense that generates three-point looks. You don't turn them down if they're there for you, especially with guys who shot, you know, this team shot 39%. In the regular season. They have it in them to shoot at least 35% every single playoff game. And those are huge baskets. You know, the other team gets hot from three. You can't match that with just, you know, getting in the paint. You got to be able to hit some threes to match or surpass, which they were able to do here in game six. What am I missing, Jim? I don't want to take this forever because we've got sleeping to get to. But like, what other storyline should we be hitting on here as we celebrate this team headed to the NBA Finals?
Yeah, no, I think, look, we thought when this all started, they'd win in five games, and they won it in six with the two-time MVP going down with a knee injury. That's saying something. You know, we'll preview the actual final here in a little bit. So I think, JR, I think there's, while we started this podcast by saying the Bucks themselves are going to enjoy it for, you know, 24 hours before they get on a plane to Phoenix. Bucks fans, I normally am not, I'm not a guy who tells fans how to feel. Like, I think if you're a fan, like, feel the way you want to feel about all the things. This is definitely one to celebrate. Like, 47 years ago, JR, 47. This is not normal for Milwaukee. No. It's not normal for the Bucks. Giannis is great. He's not like LeBron. Like, this is not a thing, you know. I don't know. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe it's the start of 10 finals in 10 years. I don't know. But for now, party it up, man. F*** it, dude.
Yes, Jim.
Like, just go have fun, man. Like, I enjoy it. I really enjoy it. And, you know, we'll get through all the angst and whatnot, you know, when the finals come and the Suns win, because they are going to win several games. They might win four. But I think Milwaukee should really enjoy it because it's been a long time. 1982, man, if you're a Milwaukee fan, you know, state of Wisconsin, obviously the Packers have done it more often. And I know Milwaukeeans love the Packers, and that's but you know what I'm saying? Like, I think it's a big deal for the city, man, and enjoy it.
No disrespect to the Milwaukee Wave or the Milwaukee Admirals. We see you. Yeah. We know you've won titles, but, you know, if we're talking the big guys, you know, NFL, NBA, MLB, the sports that are in the state of Wisconsin, yeah, it's been a while, especially in the Milwaukee area. You're talking since 1982, the year I was born, Jim Ozarski. This is quite the treat for me to see a Milwaukee team get to this stage. All right, Phoenix Suns. Real quickly, we have to talk about the matchup ahead. It seems like it's the Chris Paul, Devin Booker show. They've got good pieces elsewhere. You know, they got DeAndre Ayton, who's still an ascending player, learning how to be a dominant big man. They've got Jay Crowder, who has presented problems to the Bucks in the past. They got Michael Bridges, you know, solid defensive player, kind of a glue guy. You know, but this is Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and in some cases, really just Chris Paul who stirs the whole drink. Devin Booker has transformed himself into an electric player, but Chris Paul, age 36, this guy's in his first finals, and you know, the Suns have never won an NBA title. He's going to be hungry, and he's a guy who mixes it up. He gets in your head. He makes crazy play after crazy play. These two teams were really evenly matched in the regular season. I think this is going to be a hell of a series. What is it besides Chris Paul? I mean, is that it? Is that, if you can stop him, you can stop the engine from running, or what else is there with the Phoenix Suns?
Yeah, I mean, they're like the Bucks. You know, they really shorten the bench, and you know, they go 6-7 deep. You know, Torrey Craig, who I think might get a championship ring, JR, regardless.
I did see that online. Yes, because he played with the Bucks, he is already. The first player that we know is going to win a championship ring. Congratulations to Torrey Craig.
Yeah, that's incredible. You know, so, I mean, Devin Booker's playing 42 minutes a game. Chris Paul struggled that first round. I think he's averaging 24-plus. You know, DeAndre Ayton, I think, has really come into his own, even more so than what the Bucks have seen. So, but it is. It's a Paul Booker show. Crowder, Mikal Bridges, Ayton kind of fill their roles. I would say Ayton's above the other two. Campaign, Cameron Johnson. I mean, they're shooting threes at okay percentage. I mean, I don't expect this to be any different, JR, than what we saw in the two games in the regular season. A little slower pace, defensive minded. This is, you know, the Suns were the best defensive team in basketball most of the year. Obviously, the Bucks are playing, I think, the best defensive playoff basketball, if I have my stats right. So it might look a little sloggy, But I think both teams will like it that way. And, I think the X factor obviously is going to be, how much the two-time MVP can give the Bucks.
Exactly.
Because it took him playing four quarters for the Suns to beat him by 1 point in Phoenix, and it took him missing the overtime for the Suns to win by 1 point in Milwaukee. So I think it's going to be really evenly matched up. And, I am going to, you don't know this, so we're breaking news here on the end of this PFP. JR is looking at me like, what, wait, what do you mean breaking news? Because it's going to happen, JR. So you just have to make time in your schedule.
All right, here we go.
Former Bucks beat writers Charles Gardner and Matt Velasquez are going to join us before the series. We're going to talk a little about the series and a little bit about, I mean, what is that, JR? 20 years of Bucks
Oh my
basketball.
gosh, that's incredible. I love it.
Yes. So that we will get you back with a hashtag PFP.4 podcast, and we'll get into the Suns. We'll get into all this good stuff. JR's just learning about this now because, this is how we do things when it happens at 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's coming together. I've got interviews already set up. I've got 90 minutes before changing planes from Milwaukee to Phoenix tomorrow, and I've got two interviews set up there for some great stuff coming up. JR's got seven things to know about the Suns. Ben Steele's, Marquette guy. I mean, Kawhi Leonard's out, JR, but Jay Crowder's a real boogeyman for this
Indeed.
team. And Ben Steele's digging into that, man. I'm excited. We got a lot of good stuff coming up just in these few days.
Jay Crowder, remnants of the that Heat loss in last year's
Yeah.
Eastern Conference semifinals. Crowder, that was his best playoff series. He averaged 15.2 points per game in that series, a major thorn in Milwaukee's side. It wasn't the only thing that went wrong, but he definitely did his part. This is his first year with the Suns, of course. Like Jim said, former Marquette University standout, who's yeah, he's the type of player that the Bucks have historically had trouble with. One of those guys who's, a bigger guy who can shoot a little bit, stretch the floor, like the third or fourth option as you shut down maybe one, two, and three. But I don't know if it's going to be like that with Jrue Holiday on the floor. I feel like defensively there just isn't going to be a gap, even without Dante DiVincenzo, who we probably haven't talked about enough. The way they've overcome his absence is pretty remarkable, especially with the way they've been able to maintain their defensive intensity without him. But I just don't know if that's going to happen necessarily in this series. Frank Kaminsky, Wisconsin Badgers star, is on the Suns. He's probably going to be just cheerleading most of the time. He did not play in the Western Conference Finals, so I wouldn't expect to see much from him, if anything, in the NBA Finals. But still, that's another tie. And Torrey Craig, man, that guy's been good. He's gonna if he wants to have, I mean, he's getting a ring either way. But if he wants a revenge series, this would be it. This would be it for Torrey Craig. We talked a lot about him earlier in the season.
Oh yeah, I look, and we have seen Torrey Craig when he's motivated. One of those games in Denver, right? Was it the Jrue Holiday, the first game he missed with COVID? Torrey Craig was phenomenal against the Joker and Jamal Murray, I want to say. So yeah, I don't think Bucks fans are going to see a ton of him because his minutes. I mean, he's a defensive stopper. Like, there's a reason he doesn't play 30 minutes. But I definitely think Chris Middleton should have to remember what those look like in practice because I think Chris Middleton's going to see some
Yeah.
Torrey Craig this series.
I think it's a pretty simple calculus, Jim. I think if Giannis is healthy and he's ever now obviously not going to be 100%, but if he's healthy enough to contribute, like 20 points a game in this series, I think the Bucks win the series. I think the Bucks are going to be NBA champions. I don't personally anticipate we're going to have that from Giannis. I'd love to be proven wrong, but I think absent that, I do think the Suns are the better team, and I think they're probably going to win in less than seven games. Do you have any last prediction thought before we let you go?
I'll save my prediction for the next PFP we got coming up here with the other guys because I do need to see a little. I do need to hear from Giannis. I need to know where he's at, what he's feeling like. And we're gonna know soon. He's gonna speak Monday, July 5th at the NBA Finals Media Day, and I'm sure. And there's gonna be injury reports. If he's questionable, that's gonna change some things too. So I'll tease the prediction here for a minute. But I do think it's going to go, five, six, if not seven games.
We have so much at jsonline.com. Jim alluded to it. You got to check it out. We're going to be just covering this as till our, you know, little fingers fall off as we're typing out the content, like Content Kitty, the popular GIF. We are going to be pounding away on those keyboards to bring you everything. We've got a ton of stuff looking back at the 1971 season, the last time they won a title. Obviously, Jim, Lori Nickel, Ben Steele have a ton of stuff that way. Lori's got some great columns. Look back at Bobby Portis. We didn't even get a chance to talk about the revolution that was Bobby Portis in game five, even prior to that, in the first couple games of this series against the Hawks. We'll have to maybe carve out some time to talk Bobby on the next edition, but we just got a lot, Jim. It's going to be a fun ride, and we're going to be there for you all along the way, I suppose.
Yes, definitely. Make sure to keep following us along, and that's all I could say. Just follow us on all social platforms, online, all that stuff, man, because it's, look, you're not going to get any more comprehensive Bucks coverage than jsonline.com.
The Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We'll be back at you in short order. We got to talk to Charles Gardner and Matt Velasquez. They've seen some bad Bucks teams, but it's a different world now. We got to talk all about it. I mean, 20 years since they've even been within one game of the finals, let alone the 46 since they were last in the finals. It is a historic time to be a Milwaukee Bucks fan. We will chat with you again very soon. Jim, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again post haste.
Very soon. Look forward to it.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast. A Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.